Welcome to Rivcast, a Civilization podcast focused on its console platforms.
L Thrasher?
Scotty X?
CV.
So we can knock that one off pretty quickly, huh?
Yep.
You came to the forum kind of recently.
Yes.
And you feel like that's stepped up your game?
Yes, big time. I believe that not just the community itself, but the different types of game formats they put up just to be able to push people to the next step. I thought I was the best. I really thought I was the best until I joined.
We've all been there.
Yeah, I just wish that I came across the forums a lot earlier.
We love to hear that kind of validation. For me, I don't even play ranked at all anymore.
You're playing on cruise control half the time, so it creates a lot of laziness, which you play that way against forum members, and they're just going to pick you apart.
Yeah.
The biggest difference for me is when you play ranked, you play not to lose. And when you play player matches, you have to play to win.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, that's so true.
I played Game of the Week a couple times, maybe 10 times ever.
Yep.
But one thing I noticed when I played it one time is that when the AI got SOC, it gave them two of the same great person. One, they transported one to their city, teleported one to their city, and the other one they just left on the island by itself. Have y'all noticed that?
I've never seen that, no.
Never seen that thing, but I've seen strange AI behavior that seems to defy logic.
I've seen it done more than once, like, they had the same great person. Both times it was a scientist. They had two scientists at SOC. Mm. They teleported one and settled them in the city. And the other one, I guess they didn't know what to do with it. They
right.
only had one city, so they couldn't put it in their second city, I guess.
Yep. The AI used a great artist to flip a city maybe just one time, maybe twice. A tournament match against Morte flipped his second city. That was pretty great, but... Anything else you want to say about Game of the Week?
Like in multiplayer, it's all about you rush to that tech you think can blow them away. So if you're not going to go for the fastest possible time, you can always just bolt for the Knights or even for just the Oxford Bomber, and that should be able to get you a win close to zero in domination, getting a whole lot of gold from industrialization, and away you go. Also, you can manage, if you know that you need a GS or something, you can manage your GPs by getting the technology that will tend to encourage getting a GS, like Invention. Just by using the tech tree and finding the ones that lead to technologies that have the GP associated with them that you want. It's really the faster you get to the AI, the better, because you know that their defenses will be weaker. If you can charge across the map with some horses or something and get there in 2500, then excellent. If you can there with knights or something, or still fairly early, then you can probably take them just before they've got democracy and pikes.
I can recall I don't know who I was playing against, but it was just at some random game online. I was playing the Mongols versus America, and I was like, ooh, this isn't going to be easy. but turn four or so, I got a walk in on Paris, and he quit.
Yeah, we all know what rank is.
Yeah, I know. I just thought that Mongols, okay, I can handle Mongols. Mongols plus the French. No, that's too much for me. Yeah.
I was telling Scotty, I never seen it before. Arab dude, get 100 gold and rush the library. And then he was only working beakers.
Still in fundamentals.
Still in fundamentals. Working science.
And I just recently had a game versus a German. I think he built two libraries as well. Got 7 cities of gold. And then when I turned up with my galley, killed his galley, he quit. So... That was
maybe all his gold was aboard. I guess these are not Rivcast listeners.
Probably not.
First of all, you have to set up capital, probably. It doesn't have to be your capital. And then you have a little ring of cities around it.
Mm.
And how long does it take to get to that point? I mean, I'm just thinking that a lot of, like, say, the lightning catapult strategy.
Yeah.
say you're doing lightning catapults and I'm doing mega city. So my setting up the cities around me, that's going to be run around the same cost as you getting two cat armies together. So now I've got these cities. I've got a bunch of cities that are close to my capital, but I don't really have much else yet because I haven't pumped any settlers out of them yet to start getting my capital huge. So my capital is not even that big yet. And I've got these little cities. And my intention is just to build settlers. And suddenly you show up with catapult armies. Now what am I going to do?
I envisage a slightly more refined strategy where you would actually galley out, you do a legion rush on the other guy, you do all the other normal pressuring tactics.
I see.
Then as you hit the later age, instead of just expanding everywhere, you'd now expand in a narrow ring and then fall back to your big city.
I mean, I could see that working. I don't know that it would be that much better. Maybe if you have Colossus and you get it running quickly enough. Because, I mean, otherwise, what are you building, a university? I mean, come on. I think with one multiplier, you're not really, I don't know.
I usually find that I out-expand people, as most civs. Just that's, I think, maybe part of the knowing what you're doing and when to play. And even if they have a concentrated attack, like, you get a little crumble zone and you let cities get taken back, maybe. You just have to have something ready. You've got to be setting traps for him. If he brings three knight armies, you can kill those three knight armies if you're prepared. If you kind of spread them out, if you have defenses in certain spots, be ready to hit them.
As long as you're just not sitting there going, I hope my archer armies hold up, because they won't.
No. Or I hope I keep all my cities, because you might not.
Mm-hmm.
You have to know the fundamentals of the game. Defend with offensive units. Extremely, extremely important to be good at with horse armies. I think I very, very rarely lose a horse army that's not just bad battle odds, or I'm trading horse armies with somebody, or I lose a button race. Don't just move your horse army into a plains at the beginning of the turn. Definitely use defendable units, warriors, archers, militia, to fortify on places with a horse army, because if you don't know, that's going to attack the defending unit before the horse army, even if the horse army has a higher defensive value, as long as it's outside of a city. You have to do everything right.
You know about karma?
Yeah, yes. You told me about it, but I don't know if I actually believe in it on there. But you said you made it work, and I've heard my pop saying that it works, and tell us about it.
Okay, I'll show you how it works in a game. I was playing against in a game, I think it was a King title or something. Spain versus Spain, I think. I sent some units around to attack him, and he attacks me with some sort of even battle. Or maybe he was slightly disadvantaged and he wins against the odds. But the bottom line is that he got lucky in that battle. So I now expect in my next battle for me to get lucky, that he can't get two examples of really luck in a row. So because of that, I now very quickly go and attack him somewhere else. In that case, he attacked a militar, I think. So I attacked his galleon fleet with my galleon fleet and I killed it. Now, he attacks somewhere else. He attacked like an archer with a catapult or something, I think, and he won that one. I rush really quickly to attack some other unit of his with relatively even odds, but this time an important thing, like it was a legion army versus a trami, maybe with galleon support or something like that. And in a series of about three or four battles, I won three or four crucial battles, and he won three or four not very important ones. And it was absolutely huge for the game. It basically destroyed his defense. Consistently, it was relatively even battles in a row, and consistently it was he won, I won. I use cook quite often. I'll go for this, and where it doesn't seem to work tends to be where I've left a big delay in between his battle and mine, and I suspect that means that another battle occurred in the middle, attacking a barb or something like that. So I'm fairly confident that if you attack straight after you've lost, even an even battle, if you attack straight after it with another even battle, you'll probably win. There'll be a number ascribed to you and to him. So he'll get maybe 8 and mine might be 7 and for a battle. And then those will be multiplied by our attack strengths and they'll decide who wins the battle. So his 8 times 1 and mine 7 times 1 and then he wins because his number's bigger. Just to make it real simple. And then in the next round, my number has to be bigger than his. It'll just won't accept it until my number's bigger than his. And so that means that the next round, if I go 1 versus 1, I'll win. I'll still lose a 1 versus 1.5 because still his number will be bigger and he'll still win it. But if I can find an even battle, I should be confident of winning. If I find a battle where he has the advantage, I've at least got a better chance of getting the upset. That's been consistent over a lot of games. That's at least appeared to have worked for me. Sometimes real game-changing stuff. But you cannot retreat out of that battle, because if you retreat out of the battle, you haven't flicked the seed over. And so you can't take advantage of the karma.
I see.
quite often I fall into this trap. I attack them with one unit, and then I go, oh gosh, I'm about to lose. So I quit out of the battle, and then I attack them with another unit with two relatively even battles. That's a mistake, because I might as well lose the first battle and then win the second one in most situations, because probably I desperately need to win one of those battles. I can't afford to be backing out of both of them. If I back out of both of them, all of a sudden I'm on the back foot again. It's okay to lose the unit because you know he's going to lose one on the other side, and you're knocking him back. Maybe you're going to get vet or something.
Right, and I don't know if I completely am a complete believer, but I'm gonna have to do some testing though, like you did.
This is less from the mass testing, more from just experience. But I mean, it's my experience. I think Itz's and Morpork's and quite a lot of other people's experience out there seems to be the same. I believe that Sid Meier said something about it. He did this talk where he was saying, talking about how the game developed, and he was saying that a lot of game testers came to him and would say things like, oh, it's really unfair that the game seems to be cheating because my warrior lost to a barbarian. And he would go to them, or his guys would go to them and say, yeah, but, you know, the barbarian's defending at 0.5, you're attacking at 1, you know, you should lose sometimes. And they go, no, I shouldn't. I'm 1 and it's 0.5. So he creates the guarantee before 2000. He creates this bias where when you've got higher numbers like artillery, 90 versus 45 is not the same as 1 versus 0.5. And I think that he mentioned there's something along the lines of that basically losing tons in a row isn't so likely to happen. Because you know how people react if they lose 3 games in a row. There's a reasonable chance of losing 3 in a row, but you're probably going to be standing there swearing and stuff for an average civ player. The other guy's excitement from winning 3 in a row isn't quite cancelled out. You know, it doesn't quite equal the rage of the other guy's losing 3 in a row.
But then, you know, you do have those games where you lose so many even battles in a row, which is why I don't necessarily believe in that, because I've played games where I've lost so many even battles in a row that really just... And I was enraged.
But my suggestion is that you can still lose a lot of battles in a row, but not straight after each other. Lose 3 in a row. You can lose 1 that turn, 1 4 turns along, 1 5 turns along. But that means that there's all these other battles going on as well. The other guy may well be getting bad luck on his side in all those other battles that you're not involved in. The program can't cancel all of that out. It happens that your important battles were occurring at certain times when you were unlucky. But it can cancel out the idea of you landing with 3 Legion armies, attacking his archer and losing 1, 2, 3.
Right, but that has happened before. I swear that has never happened to you.
Well, I can even accept that it may not be 100% real, but it does appear to work most of the time. It appears to have won me games.
It works most of the time, but it's, I guess with Civ in general, it's exceptions to every rule, though.
Yeah.
Exceptions to every rule.
Yep.
I used to play a free-for-all, and I would try to get my 100 gold and try to get 2 libraries and then tech to irrigation, you know, for 2 extra whole population.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Great. That was huge. Huge back then.
And then I would often miss the irrigation. Then I'd be like, oh, all right, well, I'll try to get literacy then. And then I didn't get there first either. Be like, oh, gosh, China's in the game. I didn't get that either. And then stuff would happen, and somehow I would end up winning anyway. So I don't.
The good old noob days. Oh, yeah. That was fun. I remember doing that with America. Dude, I would tech irrigation for, I don't know, for like 9 turns. I tech irrigation, I get it. Right. Like, woohoo, I won.
Yep. You spend 40% of the game teching irrigation, so you can get into popular.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
And yeah, and something you still win. It's like, yeah, I can't believe that.
Then your opponent's building Stonehenge with hammers or something. So.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'll counter your irrigation with Stonehenge!
Yes. good times.
That reminds me of a game I just played against Liam where I found like 60 gold and about to walk in on 760 gold on the mainland after settling, obviously. And he was stuck on the island. I was going, I'm going to build Stonehenge. I'm going to beat you anyway.
I'm going to
rush it with gold.
What does it cost? 400 gold to gold rush it?
No. I think in the high hundreds, I think.
I think it might be 200.
Maybe 200.
I think Wenders cost double over the already double rush cost.
Every now and then I've accidentally built it because I was hammer banking on it. But usually that means the game's over.
You could accidentally build Stonehenge and your opponent might quit because he was building Stonehenge.
Probably. Yes, probably. Oh, this game's over. I might as well quit now. You've got the hinge.
Fog is the enemy of all civs, and it's like a subtle little thing, but it definitely hurts. And you don't really know which direction to send your warrior. I mean, you have guesses, but it's not the same as just heading directly there.
Yeah, always on the diagonal.
Yes, I remember Morte telling me that one.
I will always send my warriors out on the diagonal that have tiles after it.
Yeah.
So, you know, usually with your cap, there's a direction that's got water after a one step, then won't go that way. But if I can go in a direction that's got a diagonal, you might be able to get a goody hut or a barb hut at 3,600, and you got even more.
I don't think we've actually mentioned that on the show before, but yeah, if you settle in your initial spot, you would definitely want to move diagonally from there because you might find something to take right away. You never will if you move horizontally or vertically.
I tell that to newer players that I try to help out, that it's a grid pattern, so you'll always reveal more tiles, you know, unless there's water there.
Yeah, it's true. I had a head-to-head game a few months ago. I got the Spanish on random, and I was playing against a Spanish player. Just at the start, I decided, okay, you can be the real Spanish. I'm just going to horse rush. And I totally took over the mainland, and I took out all the AI really fast, because he wasn't even a presence on the mainland. I had a million cities on the mainland, and because I got so much gold off the mainland, I had no trouble expanding the islands, too. And basically, I mean, I was, like, everywhere on the map. It's just an interesting thought, and I've never in that game prioritized whales, except I would eventually find them because I was absolutely everywhere, opportunistically using them, but I never really made a thing out of it.
Thrasher likes to play kittens.
Oh, he was okay. He was a right player.
Don't get too focused on the whales, because you can get lost if you're on a bad map. Mostly when we talk about map control, it's on the mainland. But for the Spanish, especially with medieval, it turns into controlling the seas. If no one can float their galley or galleon or anything else out there and you own the seas, then they're stuck with going straight at your capital. And then that makes it really easy for you to defend, because you just put all your counter units in there and just mow them down as they come.
Maybe not a lot of good options, because you really need the money tax with the Spanish, but you could get cruisers and go on the attack with cruisers. I like doing that. You could get to university and invention and build Oxford University for flight, which at least will protect you from someone else getting bombers. And it's a good thing to do, because at least you don't have to worry about bombers way before you're ready.
Flight is sweet.
Now you're ready for bombers whenever they come. I mean, you have fighters, so...
No, fighters can win easy.
I had the Spain-China games were pretty exciting. I mean, they had some good games in there where, you know, China's hope is they just got to tech the cruisers as quick as they can. And Spain has got to stop. And sometimes Spain doesn't get very much gold or whatever, and they can't get the pressure on really quick. Or sometimes China gets 100 gold, like at 3,500 or something.
China can have insanely good starts without really that much trouble. I mean, I've had 3 horse armies at 3,200, no problem. That's going to be hard for Spain to deal with if they're anywhere nearby at all. You know?
Well, yeah. I mean, Spain needs, you know, room.
You can still get frustrated in those. So you get a China start. You think you've got a great China start. You've got your horse armies up. You're wandering around. The Spain guy goes and gets a great Spain start. So he's got a galleon fleet up and a whole bunch of legions on it and archers. And by the time he lands, he's effectively attacking you with 12 horse armies or something. You've only got your 3 horse armies.
Well, okay, he's going to have a really, really good start to be having his 12 legion armies when I have 3 horse armies.
No, not legion armies, just single legions and archers, right?
Oh, yeah, well, either way, right, well, yeah.
You've got the equivalent in hammers and Chinese units, but it won't cut it.
I have to get to him much sooner.
One legion has 9 attack.
No, I get that. I get that, but he's got a tech to medieval, he's got a tech 4 techs, one of which is a 30 beaker tech. China can be attacking Madrid within 10 turns.
No, I mean, obviously the Spain, if the China guy has access to Madrid, then this isn't going to work, because he's going to get there too soon, you're going to be under pressure, you won't be able to get all the gold and hammers required.
Believe it or not, surprisingly in the games against Mafia, I think maybe one game he was on top of me in the first 10 turns, but I mean, he still was able to win, you know, half of them, so he just would tech or expand,
but
I mean...
The interesting thing I found playing JP Kinese on this, you know, we originally thought
thought that China should be stronger and that China should slowly pull away, but it felt in most of our games as if China was slowly losing it, that China had to get to him. He had to put the pressure on. If he couldn't put the pressure on, mm-hmm. Spain was going to kill him.
Yeah.
And eventually it would come, and that Galleon fleet would turn up with all its legions, and you just wouldn't have any answer.
Well, Spain shouldn't horse rush. That's one thing. If you're horse rushing with Spain, that's a big mistake. The only time I horse rush with Spain is if I get it from a barb or something or a friendly. Then I'll horse rush. But, I mean, it's just a waste to me to tech that and twice as much as a legion, and I could expand. And if I get a whale, I could have, by the time I get my 100 gold, 2 sailors in my galleon and each put those on a whale city.
They do cost twice as much as legions, but they cost 30 science less. Sometimes with Spain, you're so flush with gold that it's just better to use horsemen or, you know, maybe even warriors and get the attack started sooner. Because you can't rush attack.
You could have
a couple of horses out onto the mainland going out there pulling up gold, and then you could have a galleon out on the ocean looking for...
Never say never.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the games I've played, it takes too long.
But I certainly play it the same way as you do. Generally, I wouldn't be horse rushing, and I wouldn't even think.
The games I play, it just takes too long, and it doesn't go well with the galleon fleet, especially against China. Every turn is very important, so the sooner you can get legions to them, the better. I mean, taking out the AI is not the biggest thing. If you settle with the whale, you, like I said, you could, by the time you get your 100 gold, you can pump out a settler with the 100, so you got 2 settlers on the galleon. Settle with the well, it's not that hard to tech. You could tech ironworking in 3 turns. And then, you know, work all gold, and then you're producing a legion army a turn or something going back and forth, and then, you know, get your galleon fleet up. It goes really quick. But I think mm-hmm. teching the horseback riding just wastes too many turns in more games than not.
I think that you have to play it by ear and figure out what the best call for your current game is. I mean, the thing is that if you have one super hot strategy that's totally going to win, then your opponent should know, all I have to do is counter this one strategy, and then I can win.
Yeah, well, how are you going to counter it? Like, are you going to attack my archers with the horse
army? I was up against a Spanish guy with my French the other day, and basically what I did was I knew where he was. I didn't settle anything on the top coastline of the continent.
You can slow down your opponent greatly by not giving him any coastal cities.
Yeah. You're obviously making a bit of a sacrifice to do that.
That's the thing. Spain doesn't have to attack. Like, say, if you're going to do what you're doing, and I'm like, okay, that's fine. I'll just expand to these nice whale islands. I've already got 3 cities. I could get 4 cities. Oh, but look at that. I'm in democracy. Oh, I'm about to get cruisers. Oh, you know, I can get knights, tanks, whatever. I mean.
That's right. If you notice that your opponent's reacting to you that way and you change gears in time, then you'd probably be in good shape. But if you don't notice that, and if you keep building legions too long, thinking, I'm going to crush him with my legions, and then it takes 15 turns to sail to a coastal city.
That's the great thing about Spain, though. They have map knowledge so quick. They could see pretty much the whole map within 20 turns, usually, in most games. See most of the coastal lines. You know what your opponent's doing and where they're expanding to. And if they're expanding inland, they're not going to be able to win the game.
But it depends. Your opponent could be Egypt.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Well, yeah.
There are also such things as lakes. Usually not enough. Sometimes enough to get you somewhere.
Wouldn't be enough to out-tech Spain, not even close.
Well, perhaps not, but there might be enough to get the techs that you need to quickly grab all the capitals.
Well, if I'm building legions, and I'll just leave my legions in my capital, and then when you try to come after me, I could just...
Right, but if you're building legions, eventually you put them on a fleet and sail them off somewhere. And at that point, I'm not saying that this is something that would definitely work, but I'm saying that by definition, you have to become vulnerable at a certain point. And so there's a window there that someone could take advantage of.
Oh, yeah, 10 turns, Spain's vulnerable, yeah.
Even after that, there's an opportunity to grab all 5 capitals when that fleet is off sailing. And you have to have a good start. But if you don't have a good start, Spain does have a good start, then you probably can't win.
But I would probably be able to assume that if I see you're producing those cities inland or you know, doing the lake trying to do that, and I see that, well, okay, this isn't going to work. Why am I going to take my legions over there? I'm not going to have galleon fleet support. What's the point of that? Then right then, I got some islands right here. Okay, I'll just expand. What is he going to do to stop me? He's going to come after my capital? Well, I have like 5 legion armies here. Okay, I could just slot that down like nothing.
Well, I was starting to think that with the China versus Spain thing, that, and also when we were playing Aztec versus Spain, that sometimes you just got forced into going, look, I know they've got naval support, but I've got to take that fleet versus fleet chance. Otherwise, he's just going to build all these stupid island cities and out to me.
In the games against Mopoc, they
would have been just a waste. He wouldn't have had time. Even counter catapults won't even work. A legion army in a tree is the naval support. What is that, 12 defense? I mean, I've just put single archers in that. And there's a good chance.
But, I mean, you're 13.5. I mean, I was playing, I think it was Morpork, but basically you're on 13.5. If I've got a galleon fleet, maybe if I've got two of them and I can get one to support the other or something, or at least two of them in a row, it's still better than just leaving you there to beat the crap out of me with all your single legions.
Oh, well, yeah, you know if you have time, though. But I don't know how he did. I mean, he did Race to Cruiser, and he got really quick. In some of the games, he got at like 500 BC or something like that. I mean, there's 0 BC, which is really quick. Yep. By the time, you know, I might take a couple of his cities, but oh, snap, here comes the cruiser fleet. Well, crap, I can't do anything now.
Oh, yeah, you know, but aren't you going to get cruisers now? You've been hammer banking. And
well, no, I'm going to pick up literacy and all this other crap. That,
oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I guess so. But I mean, if you did get cruisers and you've been hammer banking, then boom, he's toast.
Yeah, that's pretty lucky. You know, it's weird, though. I've noticed, say, you're medieval. This happened when I came against most, who was pretty interesting.
Yep.
And the other dude's like in modern or industrial or something, you have a really good chance of getting the most advanced tech. But like, if you guys are in the same era, you'll just get like the weakest tech.
Yep.
But there's this one game where he was Zulu and he got like Colossus, and I was America, and I was doing what I could. You know, I was expanding every tile and everything, but I mean, I had a slow start, and he was Colossus library, and he took out like every other civ too, I think. So he had 4 calves. I made a galleon fleet and I took one of his cities and I got cruisers, and I was still in medieval.
Yep.
So I can make your cruiser fleet a turn. So, and he GS industrialization corporation, and didn't mean anything. I was already doing like 100 something gold a turn, and I could that's cruiser fleet a turn. He's like, oh crap! And he see me, and I got the turn. I got the tech. I made a cruiser fleet and killed it. He's like, all right, it's done. I'm like, oh, a cruiser fleet's only $120. That's freaking sweet. 120 cruiser fleet. I've never seen that before.
Yes, that's pretty disgusting.
Yeah, if you just got electricity and you were able to make subs, then you could have made it.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
You could have spelled your name.
If I would have got electricity from him, I would have lost. There's no way. He had cities spread everywhere. Just turns and hope. Yeah, he just checks.
How did your primitive people know what to do with the cruisers?
I don't know, man. I guess they just looked at it and said, hey, this is pretty awesome.
And we can make them 3 times as cheaply, maybe even more.
We're so industrious.
6 times as cheaply as the other people.
If I'm going to bank hammers, I'll bank it on a wonder.
Then they got obsoleted, and then you all of a sudden have 5 cities that you need to manage at the beginning of your turn.
Yeah.
I understand. But usually by the industrial, though, there's some pretty big wonders that people aren't going to get or obsolete for a while.
Yeah, I don't want to bank hammers in 10 cities, though. What's the point of that?
Yeah.
I used to always do wonders, and I recently have switched to always doing some kind of, even a wall or something, just to bank hammers. Are you banking more than 100? Not in very many places.
Right.
I'll just let it build the library or temple. Even though we like fundamentalism and we're spending much of the game in fundamentalism, you can still use the library by going to anarchy at the end of every turn.
Right.
I'm not saying libraries are awesome or anything like that.
No.
But when you've got 40 extra hammers, might as well get one.
And if you do have like a super trade city, and you could probably afford it by spending a few turns on gold, if nothing else, or you can probably afford it right away, a library is not always a bad idea. But our big rule of thumb is it's better to build settlers instead of buildings.
Yeah.
But if there's no more room for settlers, then buildings are valid options. If units aren't what you need.
Why don't you need units?
Well.
I have units.
All right.
All those catapult armies.
You have everything.
So, why haven't I won yet is the question you're searching for.
That's a good question.
For more information about RevCast or sibling shows, log onto the series' official website at thepolycast.net. Material recorded for episodes 20, 23, 24, 28, 40, 41, 44, 45, and 47 were included in this episode. Panelists in order of appearance: Al Thrasher, Scotty X, Multiplayer Beast, Grizzly Tigers 4, Duke Blue 1987, Japanese, Philip 23, It's Denied, The Headless 10, Tyshine, Madjin, and Grayson.
Civilization Revolution Sound Clips Copyright Take 2 Interactive.
Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.